You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here's the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now let's get on with today's show. Have you ever wondered why you do the things that you do when parenting or say the things that you say? Have you ever caught yourself saying something your mother would have said or maybe your grandmother? Maybe your parents are from another country and you found yourself growing up in the U.S. and there were challenges with that. What was it like? What kind of conflicts did that create? My guest today is Joy Acaso. Joy is a licensed clinical social worker and is passionate about helping other busy parents navigate their relationship with their own children. Joy came to the United States at 15 years of age from the Philippines and has experienced the conscious awakening of shifting from habitual and learned parenting and breaking away from tradition and norms to conscious and heart-centered parenting.
Well, welcome, Joy. It's so great to have you here, and I'm really excited about our conversation today. We had a really great call recently, and we were, you know, talking a little bit about our own personal history in raising children and, growing up as, you know, a young girl and woman. And you know, what came up, which was interesting, were these different cultural, you know, habits or ways of parenting based on, you know, where our families are from and how it's kind of affected some of the things that we've done or our mindset. And so I really want to dive into that a little bit today. Can you tell us a little bit about you, you know, what you do, and we'll get started?
Yes. Thank you, Maria, for having me here today. I am a wife and a mom of two kids, 9 and 4 years old. And by trade, I am a licensed clinical social worker and a parenting coach.
Awesome. So tell me about your background a little bit when, growing up, what things were like at home for you as a young girl growing up.
Okay. So, my heritage is Filipino. I was born in the Philippines and I came to the United States when I was 15 years old. Prior to that, my mom had been working here as a nurse. So we came like 6 years later. So she would just come back, like, you know, go back and forth to the Philippines. She left when I was 9. And so growing up, like, wow. I grew up with my dad, basically, and like my mom and I would connect, you know, like every 6 months out of the year. And so it was an adjustment, like coming here when I was 15 years old. I was already 15, so I had my friends in the Philippines, and I was already pretty much established. And then so when I came here, I was homesick a lot. And my mom and I, like, and my relationship with my parents was very much affected. So I had to reconnect with them and kind of get used to having both of them with me.
And learning how to navigate having two parents.
Yes.
That's really interesting. What do you think, you know, coming to the United States at 15 from the Philippines? And of course, there's so much difference in culture between the Philippines and the United States. What for you, right out of the back, being a teenage girl, were some of your biggest challenges, that things were just very different here in the U.S. in certain ways that caused some, maybe, you know, problems with your parents?
Well, for one thing, like, a lot of what I grew up with in the Philippines, I definitely carried on, you know, coming here. So the respect for them was very, very much there, like honoring my parents, that never went away. Academically, like, because in the Philippines, you know, education was very, is still very, very important. Like, there's just no question about it. It's like you're born into it. like you have to study and you have to do well in school. And that I also carried with me when I came here. So studying was like very easy for school was very, very easy for me. Like they never had to worry about that. But then socially was a big adjustment for me, because then I had different cultures around me. Now I was in a more diverse school, whereas in the Philippines, it was just, you know, like all Filipinos, like there was no other culture in our school, it was just all Filipinos. And so all of my ideologies were just based on the Filipino culture. But then coming here, it's like, okay, there's a lot of opinions now. And one of the things, the big factors that affected my relationship with my parents is that, like, so now I have different opinions from you. How do I express that? Or do I just keep it to myself? Am I being disrespectful if I voice it out? Because there was no difference, you know, back when I was growing up. It was just everybody thought the same. It was almost like a group think.
Right. And culturally, where you talked about how studying and academics is really, really important in the Filipino culture, where, you know, from an early age, you go to school and you learn to study those long hours, and it was very, very rigorous. Where did you have as many extracurricular activities? Was there, you know, still a balance between that, or was it really very academic based?
It was very academic based for me. However, there are other Filipinos who did extracurricular activities. But for me personally, it was very academic based. And it's funny because our 9-year-old now, she's in other activities. And she would ask me, you know, what did you do when you were in the Philippines? And I was like, nothing. I just studied. Basically went to school, came home. And then whenever I would spend time with my friends, it was about doing a project. It was a group project. We didn't really, like, you know, it's very different with my daughter growing up here.
So what are the biggest differences that you see with how you were raised and how your daughter now is growing up here in the United States?
Yes. So she asks a lot of questions, and I did not. So this year we had a conversation about Halloween, and she had asked me what we do for Halloween in the Philippines. Now they do trick or treating now, but when I was growing up, we didn't have that at all. And so what we did was that I would go to the cemetery with my relatives and pay respect to our dead loved ones. And she was like, that's really creepy, mommy. Do such a thing. And, like, you know, so I told her we would stay in the cemetery, bring food, and then play cards. It's really funny now that I think about it. And then she said, you know, why did you do that? And I was like, you know, because everybody did it. And then I asked my mom the same question. I said, did you ever question, like, why, you know, we were doing those things? And she said, no, it was just a tradition that went on, you know, and we just kept doing that. And so that really triggered something in me, actually. And I said, you know, why was it that I just accepted everything that was put in front of me? And I did not question. And here's our 9-year-old asking me about all these traditions and what Filipinos do. And she's been to the Philippines, by the way, when she was 4. We took her to visit family, and she loved it. But, you know, she obviously didn't see a lot of all the other traditions and things like that. And so coming to the United States, I feel like in hindsight, this really opened my eyes, really, really, really opened my eyes to the world. And to say, like, oh, there's other people in the world that don't think like Filipinos do. So, yeah, like, when she questions, but I welcome it. My husband and I welcome her questions, and we do try our best to answer them. And we do encourage her to ask questions.
So do you think that that might have been part of why you never questioned anything as a child? Because in your culture, it wasn't really acceptable for a child to be questioning a parent? Was there not the relationship where you could ask these questions? It was more that you're told what to do and you just do what you're told?
Absolutely. As culturally, like, there's really no place for a child at 9 years old to be asking, you know, well, why are we doing this or that? You just go. Your parents told you you're going here, you go. And your parents, I don't remember ever saying no. And our kids are like, but we don't want to go there. You know, like, but we don't want to do that. Like, I don't remember ever doing that. And as a firstborn, I'm a rule follower. Mm-hmm. So I just followed everywhere. And so culturally, it's like that. With my parents, though, in our family, it was never said that, like, you can't ask questions, or it was never said that, like, hey, you can't, you know, say no. But at the same, so I was thinking about this, but at the same time, like, it wasn't encouraged either.
Right. There wasn't that, what do you think about this? Or, there was no asking your opinion. Your opinion wasn't something that was of concern to them.
No, absolutely not. It was never encouraged. And our relationship, you ask about relationship. Our relationship was very much like, they're the parents, I'm the child, and that's it. And my parents were never expressive, too. So they never said, I love you, or I'm proud of you, or anything like that. Not in those words. I'm sure they tried to show it in different ways, but I don't remember.
Yeah. And that's interesting that you bring that up, because I'm from Spain. I was born in Spain and came to the United States, when I was young, but English is my second language. But I remember I think it was when I was a teenager, my mom, I realized, never said, I love you to me. It was just nothing that was never said. It was implied. And, you know, you would be on the phone with your mom. I think it actually might have been when I was a freshman in college, and I got off the phone with her and I said, I love you, or something. And I was upset. I was homesick and I was upset. And I actually said to her, I was like, why don't you ever say that to me? Why have you never said that to me? Why don't you say, I love you? And she was like, because we don't say that in our culture. It's just not part of our culture. It's implied that I love you. I shouldn't have to tell you that. You should know by the fact that, you know, we help you with things, or the things that we do. But it was so hard for me growing up with a mother from another country in, you know, United States culture, where I would see or hear my friends' families or mom say, I love you, and be very affectionate and give hugs and stuff. And I didn't get that. So for me, it was, well, why don't I get that?
So did you start to, like, so you were observing these people, and then did you start to question, like, wait a minute, why?
I questioned, I got angry about it. And, you know, like you, I'm a firstborn and I'm very much a rule follower. And I think a lot of that has stemmed from the Latina culture and the Spanish culture, where there wasn't a lot of opportunities to express my own opinion. I wasn't asked my thoughts on certain situations. You know, I went to Catholic parochial school starting at 3 years age with nuns. Very, very, very rigid. The whole concept of children should be seen and not heard. And, you know, the way that they talked about, you know, back then, the Catholic Church and you know, not being sinful and all of that caused me to be a very rigid rule follower. And I still, to this day, it's probably one of my biggest hurdles, is that I have a very hard time breaking rules. I have a very hard time when other people don't follow rules. I don't understand why people can't do that. And then what happens for me is that if I don't have the rule to follow, I'm lost. Mm-hmm. So, and it's so funny we're talking about this today because, this is something that I've been working on, that it, especially being an entrepreneur, it's a huge challenge for me because, you know, being an entrepreneur or being in a creative field, if you don't have set guidelines on how to do things, I struggle with that. There isn't as much room for creativity because it's not how I was brought up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm tracing that now back to the cultural, you know, stereotypes or the habits that were instilled as a child. And for me, and I think from what I'm hearing from you, are things that we kind of recognize. So for my girls, I've always asked them their opinion. Well, what do you think about that? You know, and it's not something that had ever been asked to me.
Right. No, for sure. Same here. And I know that, like, for example, like with the consequences at home, we even ask, our 4-year-old doesn't really, I mean, we ask him too, but, you know, at least he knows that, like, his opinions are welcome too. But we would ask them, you know, like, well, what should be the consequence if this is not done? You know, so that just so they know, and they have sense of ownership too, as far as like their responsibilities and the consequences of their actions.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that growing up.
No, I definitely didn't have that. So let's talk a little bit about things that maybe you've noticed in your own parenting that
sure.
You've done and said, or like, you know, I have so many moments where I'll be like, my mother just fell out of my mouth. Like things that I would say, I could like flash back to her saying it. And I think for me, my first really big moment in being a parent where I did something, I yelled, and the Latin culture is very loud. We're very loud. We our voices get very loud, even when we're excited, not even when we're angry, but even in excitement, our voices get very loud. And I remember just being yelled at a lot, like very loudly. And I remember doing that as a parent out of habit because that was the behavior that was modeled to me. So I thought that's how you parented, right? You yell. I was spanked a few times, and that I knew is something I didn't really want to do. I did it once, and I realized very quickly through intuition that's not how I wanted to parent. But The whole concept of learning to parent from calmness or from a quiet voice and not having to raise my voice was something that I had to work through and break away from because that's how I was brought up. So that's kind of how I thought you're supposed to do it. I didn't realize There were other ways. Or there's certain situations that you've had with your own children that you've noticed things like that.
Yes. I've had a lot of moments. For one thing, like, so my parents were not very expressive in words. And for some reason, like when I became a parent, that was one thing that like just came out of me that I promised myself that I would tell the kids, you know, as often as I can, how proud of them we are and how much I love them. And so that's one thing that was different that I could express myself to them. And also, I noticed, because I am a rule follower, going back to that. So I was already a therapist before I became a mom. So I had already worked with families prior to being a mom. And so I've seen all these things, right? And I've already formed my ideas as far as how I would parent. So when our daughter was 3, I got very upset because I came home from work and the house was a big mess. And I had given my husband a schedule of like, you know, what to do. Mm-hmm. And I had to break that. And I was like, why is this not working? We have schedules, we have structure, and nothing is working. But I look at my daughter and she was happy. And I was like, wait. So I had to like reconcile that in my brain and figure out she's happy. The house is a mess. You know, what's going on? And so like, because in the Filipino culture, we favor structure a lot.
Right.
We favor rules versus the relationship.
Right.
And so at that point, I realized that, like, wait a minute, I don't have a relationship with my child and she's already three.
Because you were on following the structure and stuff. Yeah, and it's hard because we do know that structure helps, but yeah. You have to find that balance between.
And I was erring more towards the, like, structure, this, and the rules. But the relationship was lacking.
Yeah, that's hard. But it's great that you recognized that and that you saw that and then pivoted from it to, you know, parenting from a different method. So are your parents still around?
Yes.
So what is it like? What is it like now for you to be around your parent as, you know, a mother, and for them to see that you're parenting your child much differently than the way that you were parented?
Yes. So I just want to say before we you're laughing. I think you know what I'm about to
yes,
say.
Yes, I do.
When I was thinking about this interview, Maria, I cried.
Yeah.
I really cried because I had to look back and like, okay, so what is it that, you know, just everything. So I cried. So hopefully I won't cry.
It's okay. It's okay if you do cry. I've been crying all day already.
You have?
Oh, it's been one of those weeks.
Oh, that's funny. So the funniest thing is that my parents are now actually more expressive than ever. And I look at them and I'm like, why? How come, like, when we were kids, so I have a brother, a younger brother. So when we were kids, like, I don't remember you being like telling me that I love you or anything like that. Now we do. Now we tell each other, but I can't remember. You said for you was when you were in college. I can't remember the first time that we said, you know, those words to each other. And it was a big adjustment. Very, very big, huge adjustment for me. We lived with my parents the first year, for the first year that we were married. And we had our eldest daughter, and she was born. And, you know, we lived with them until she was 2 years old, and then we moved out. And so, I can't even tell you, like everything. I wanted to train her how to sleep. They were like, no, why are you letting her cry like that? Look at what's going on. And so I was like, okay, forget it. I'm just not gonna, you know, do that. And then I felt very, very judged in my parents' house, and very unappreciated, and like I felt like I was doing everything wrong, you know. And but after we moved out, I worked on myself. So I had to figure out, like, okay, what are my own insecurities, and I can't let that get to me, because then it would affect my parenting, not just my relationship with my parents, but my relationship, you know, with my children. So I had to step back and say, like, okay, I need to figure myself out.
And how I'm going to do this and what feels right for me. Yeah. And I think that's, hard. And I felt a lot the same way as you did with my oldest. You know, I had a prior medical background. And so when my oldest, I was pregnant with her, I decided I wanted to do things very differently. I did not want to go with a regular OB. I didn't want to have a baby in a hospital. I wanted to have her at home. And so my mother's a nurse. My mother was a neonatal nurse practitioner in Spain before she came to the United States. My husband was actually born at home. So I had the support on that side and the knowledge, but I was very sick with my daughter and my labor was actually very long. And I had this idea in my head that I would invite my family and my in-laws to my house to have the birth of my daughter. In hindsight, that was a horrible idea. And I didn't do that with my second. But I remember being like 40 plus hours in labor. And my mom had a really horrible labor with me as well. And I think she was having flashbacks of it. And unfortunately, I was born with the cord around my neck and I had to be resuscitated. So my mom was really panicking. And I remember at one point she was just saying to me, please just go to the hospital. Please just go to the hospital and do it that way. Like everybody else does it. And I think I held on at home a little bit longer just to spite her because I didn't want to do it the way she did it. Right. And I did end up transferring her and having, you know, a normal delivery, the hospital. But then we had breastfeeding issues and, you know, my daughter had some trauma. So she had some, reactions where she couldn't really suck, not even on a bottle. We had to syringe feed her and all this. And it was this one thing I just didn't want to let go. I just didn't want to let go of, not being able to breastfeed her, right? Like my pregnancy had been horrible. My delivery had been horrible. I didn't have her at home like I wanted. And I was just adamant, like I would breastfeed this kid. And it nearly broke me. I got into very bad postpartum depression, borderline postpartum psychosis. And she didn't latch until she was 9 weeks. And I remember my mom just, I felt so judged. She's like, I don't understand why you won't just give her a bottle and give her formula. And this is crazy and blah, blah, blah. And I remember, and I know it was coming from a loving place. I know that in her heart, she was saying to me, you don't have to do this. You're making it harder on you. But I just felt judged. Like there was nothing I could do that would be the right way. And, the little lessons like that kept coming over and over in the first year of her first year, because she had some continued medical issues. And I went, you know, I did some Western medicine, but I did a lot of different alternative methods of healing her and working with her, which worked amazing. But it was at the end of that year that I realized, through a lot of trials and tribulations, that I needed to find what worked for me. And I think that's what all moms need to do, is you need to really hone in and tune into your intuition. It's what's given to you by Mother Nature to know how to parent your children and do what feels good to you. And, you know, I've learned to forgive my mom for things that she's done that maybe I don't agree with, that maybe are issues that I currently have that I'm trying to work through. And this is when I get, you know, teary-eyed. She did the best that she could. And I continue with on my journey to do the best that I can and surround myself with as much knowledge and follow my intuition. But it's so much harder when you have like that cultural background, right? When you have grandparents that come in or moms that come in, and there's this whole culture surrounding parenting that I think people don't see. And I think in the US we have a culture as well, which is really interesting, but for parents to kind of recognize, you know, all of that. How have you had conversations with your parents on ever bringing up saying, you know, why did you do certain things? Why, you know, were they just following from their own parents as well?
Yeah. So like that conversation we had about Halloween was one recently. My mom looked at me, we were having lunch and my mom looked at me and she said, you know, I didn't know that abuse was so rampant in the Philippines. And I looked at her and I was like, seriously? She's like, no, I was so naive. So I see like little things like popping up for her personally too. So as I am working on my own, I think, you know, there's also things that are coming out for her too. And she's like, no, but I didn't know, because she was watching the 700 Club in Asia. And so they had featured the Philippines and just talking about physical abuse at home and like sexual abuse and things like that. And she said, you know, I had no idea it was that bad in the Philippines. And that's what happens when we don't talk. right? Like, right. As a culture, we don't talk about those things. It's hush hush. And, you know, and in the Filipino culture, when you have a problem, you just try to solve it on your own. And I grew up like that too. Like, okay, I am feeling this way. I need to figure it out. And so, funny enough, then I became a social worker.
Thank you so much, Joy. It was such a great conversation and a truly enlightening one. To find out more about Joy, you can find her at joyacaso.com, A-C-A-S-O. To hear the rest of this interview, as we further explore this topic, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.
Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.